Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, I don't like to say it, but today is the final gardening program of 2018. Autumn has arrived. The leaves are dropping. Soon our gardeners will go into Vox Pop hibernation. So if you have 1 hour to spend, let's spend this final hour together. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Joining us today, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. Always a popular show, especially since this is the last one of the year. So call early, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Mums, shrubs, your calls, a bittersweet program on the way. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is, the final gardening show for the year 2018. And joining us, our familiar voices, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Good to be here. Well, it feels like fall out there today.
It does.
Finally.
It's kind of a bittersweet moment, but yet refreshing. We don't have to see each other for a few months, right?
Well, there's that.
I mean, it's really a great time to be working in the yard. In the first week of October, it was still summer. I wanted to get out there and do things.
We had 80 degrees 2 weeks ago, right?
It was really mild weather. It was overall mild.
And so I finally started actually gardening about 10 days ago. I like this weather.
That's coming to an end soon, though, yeah?
No, I got a month.
We got
a month.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty chilly last night. I don't know about you. Maybe it's more tropical.
We try to get stuff done before Thanksgiving.
Until the ground really starts to freeze up, you can do everything. You can be planting daffodil bulbs in December if you have to. I would encourage you to do it sooner. But there's no reason why you couldn't. A little extra mulch on top, and they'll be very happy.
If you have trees and plants that you didn't put in yet, it's time to put it in right now. Perennials.
And, of course, Greg and Bob, you guys must be pretty busy over at the shops, huh?
There's a lot going on right now. People still buying mums, and actually, it's a great time for trees and shrubs. Selection's not as good, but there's lots of stuff.
It's pretty fun to see the colors. The fruit is showing now. So if you don't really have an idea about what winterberry looks like and why it's important, that fruit is glowing right now. Crab apples, same thing.
Fall color. A really good time to start thinking about winter protection for which we're really in part of our wintering and shutting down for the arboretum for the winter, getting those plants protected.
You said things are going like gangbusters at the arboretum right now.
Things are really buzzing over at Landis Arboretum.
Yeah.
Right
now. Oh, things are buzzing.
Buzzing.
Which reminds me, thank you for this jar.
Oh wow!
See what he did there? This jar of honey there, Fred.
Oh boy,
that's nice stuff.
I didn't
good
see
looking
that
stuff.
Coming.
Yeah. that is official Landis grown honey.
Oh, that's nice.
We have Landis resident bees that we moved in a couple of years ago, and we have a really good site for the bees. We have a lot of plants and no shortage of food for them. So the first year we didn't really take much of any of the honey, left it all pretty much for the bees. But this year we harvested quite a bit,
and I was told
I think we left close to 100 pounds for the bees after we took tons of it out.
Right.
Wow. And we will be selling jars of honey for a fundraiser for Landis Arboretum, so you can visit our website.
Oh, terrific.
LandisArboretum.org to find out more about the honey. Also visit our Facebook page.
How many bees do you have over there?
Oh, it's thousands of them.
So when someone hangs around too long at the Arboretum, do you set the bees loose on them?
No, we don't. We got the hornets for that.
You do?
The hornets continue to re-sting, and besides, the bees only sting you once, and then they die. We don't want to lose our bees.
Smithers, release the hornets. Very nice. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's take a call. Sandra in Northfield, Mass. Sandra, you're on.
Hi. I have three apple trees that didn't produce any apples this year. And when I looked at the trees, all the leaves were gone. And I was wondering, did a bug attack them? Are they totally dead now? I have no idea what's going on with them.
What kind of trees?
Apple.
Wow. This happened to our crab apple tree.
Yeah. Now, you had, have you had good fruit in the past, or is this kind of like a fluke this year, first time?
Well, we just moved onto the property last year, and last year we had loads of apples.
Okay. Well, that's good news. That's good news.
And that's probably exactly why you have no fruit this year.
Yeah. A lot of times they're cyclic. And they're on cycles. So a year that you get a really heavy, heavy fruit set, a lot of times the following year will be a less than the what you're used to seeing. Usually a few, but my gut feeling would be, and I think these guys would agree, called
alternate bloomers sometimes. Yep. Oh, yes. Bloom heavy one year and not the next and take a rest. Not all trees, but some do.
And so if you probably think back to May, and if you can remember how many flowers there were the trees loaded? Were they plenty of flowers? That sort
That's
of
the
helped
question.
As well.
Okay. And so because they lost all their leaves fairly early, do you know if anything attacked them, or do they just normally don't?
Leaf blights, because of the humidity, you get little spots on the leaves. It is a fungus, and the leaves succumb to that and drop off. It usually happens late enough that the tree has set buds and is pretty much ready.
It's not a problem. The tree can lose its leaves in August and really be fine.
Okay.
It's not a problem.
As long as it's the end of summer, when you say early, as long as we're not talking June.
Yeah.
It was
sort of the end of summer.
So the real question is, if you had flowers this spring and you didn't have apples, that's one thing. If you didn't have flowers this spring, then it's just simply an alternate bloomer. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And
that's perfect.
The disease, in case you're wondering, is called apple scab. It has a little black spot. You'll see it on the fallen leaves. If you rake up those leaves and don't compost them as you go through the season, just next year, obviously, probably a lot of those are already broken down this year, but rake them up and get them off site.
Yeah.
And that'll actually help to reduce the amount of infection for the following year.
Interesting.
You're basically having overwintering spores on those leaves. So if you leave them there, it has all the inoculum it needs to get your next year's infection.
No matter how severe the winter is.
Yeah, nothing to do with the winter. The spores won't die from cold. It's not going to get cold enough here to get rid of apple scab spores.
And then the severity of the summer has a lot to do with the humidity, how long the leaves are staying wet during the summer months.
Yeah, and this was a really bad year good year for diseases.
For disease.
And is that the same thing that affects crab apples?
Same thing.
We had that with our crab apples. Now, we finally lost the last few leaves in the last couple of weeks,
that's okay.
It was early. We got apples on the thing.
Yeah, all the way from, really August, you start to see the massive leaf drop, and the trees are going to be shutting down, kind of getting close to that time anyways.
Yeah.
And that's why, as Bob pointed out, it doesn't usually hurt the trees. That's why, because they're kind of shutting down anyways. Mm. But if it happened early in the season, that would be bad because it needs to make a lot of food to get through the winter.
Okay. Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show, last one for 2018. Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry, you're on.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
What I'm calling about is I planted what they call super petunias this year, my flower boxes. And the only thing I put in those flower boxes was Miracle-Gro. And I had fantastic success with those plants. They were cascading beautifully. My question is, Miracle-Gro, can I use that same Miracle-Gro next year and the year after? Does it lose its mojo after a while?
Oh, this was the soil? You're talking Miracle-Gro soil?
The potting mix?
Yeah. So there's probably, they're very likely, and especially knowing that they did well, fertilizer that was mixed into that soil, and that fertilizer has been used up.
Yep.
So
that's depleted. You can use the soil again if you refresh it with maybe a little bit of new soil, but also some additional fertilizer. But it's not a bad thing to replace that soil for annuals every year either.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. You'd probably have better luck replacing the soil and getting new stuff in there. Just annuals. Sometimes get a lot of that. If you start using that soil over and over, you're going to get some potential root diseases, especially with annuals.
Some people cheat a little and use half and half.
Mm-hmm. You could do that too,
If it doesn't take that much, just replace it. Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
Thanks, Kerry. We appreciate the call. Over to Marie in Stormville. Hi, Marie.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
All right, so here's my story. I have got a garden plot that has two very healthy bushes of irises, and it used to have a sugar maple, and about 5 years ago, it succumbed to Brazilian wilt. Mm-hmm. I had it taken out, and then I replaced that spot, and I put in a tricolor birch, which lasted 2.5 years. And now it is completely dead. And not only is it dead and completely shriveled up, it has fungus growing on the bark.
Okay.
So
my question is, should I remove it right now? Can I wait till spring? And what do I put in that spot that might actually survive?
Okay. We have about a minute here,
so
gentlemen.
The verticillium wilt is not related to the fungus on the stem of your tricolor beech, I think, is what it is?
Birch.
Probably a beech.
No?
Probably a beech, okay.
We're thinking beech.
There isn't a tricolor birch
that we're aware of. Yep.
So there you go.
We're thinking beech.
All right.
Tricolor is not a real easy thing to grow. Either.
It's not. It's a little bit marginal.
It can have trouble for unrelated reasons to what you've got.
That's right. And beech in general, although the tricolor would be a European variety, so it wouldn't be too susceptible to the beech bark diseases that the American beeches get. But the tricolor is a bit more finicky.
And in answer to your question, you can take it out anytime.
Yeah, take it out anytime.
Doesn't make any difference.
And what? Don't plant another maple in there because that verticillium does not go away. But you could try a birch this time.
Okay.
There are no tricolor versions, but a nice river birch would be a good choice.
Yep. It has a real nice bark, and it doesn't get you do want to be careful about planting a paper birch, only because even though I love that the classic white birches, they do indeed get another insect, a bronze birch borer, which threatens the life of those plants. But if you went with the river birch that Greg had mentioned, virtually no problems with that plant. Nothing that would kill it.
All right, we'll take a break here. It's The Gardening Show, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's the last gardening show of the year, but you know, the guys will be back before you know it. Last time to get your call in, however, in calendar year 2018. The number is 800-348-2551. Two emails and then back to the phones. This one's from Rennie. I'm in Woodstock. I'll be starting a new lawn in the spring. Currently, I only have dirt down. What is the earliest I can put topsoil seed and hay down in the spring?
Well, you can do it now. Actually, it wouldn't be a bad time.
If that whole area was relatively flat, you could do everything he just said now, and the seed would probably not germinate.
It's not going to germinate.
It's not going to germinate.
But it would germinate in the spring. It would sit there.
The nice part about doing it now is if you wait till spring, it'll start to grow before it starts to dry out, which is good. And it's kind of hard to get on it and seed it because it's mucky in the spring. And also, don't use hay.
That's
use
right.
straw, yes. Because if you use hay, you're going to have a hay field.
You are.
No.
A million weeds.
He has to wait till spring, probably whenever the ground is firm and well drained.
Yeah, as soon as you can get on it.
Which often is not before the middle of April.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this one's from Tana in Cooperstown. Do I cut my spirea back now? I believe they're spring blooming because they finished blooming by July. How short? 6 to 8 inches from the ground? And that's from Tana.
What? So we have to determine whether they're truly spring blooming or not. If they're finishing at the end of July, they're probably summer blooming.
That sounds like a summer bloomer.
And those you could cut any time. You can just clean them right up. But if they're pink or magenta, then they're summer blooming. If they're white, they're spring blooming, and they would finish by early June, and those you should not cut back now.
No, a lot of times...
6 to 8 inches is pretty low. I don't know if I'd take them down quite that far, but you could.
Yeah, Yeah,
depends on what they are.
Depends on what they are, I suppose. Yeah, I also would recommend, personally, I like to do it in the springtime prior to growth. The only issue with that would be if they are spring bloomers. But it works really well. You shear them exactly how you want them, and then you're going to get all that new growth and all
and
that energy.
Seed heads are kind of fun right now. And although we're cleaning up the garden quite a bit now because you don't want the voles in there, now's the time to really get everything out.
And voles like spirea, too.
Yeah.
Do they really?
Another reason that... I thought they wouldn't jump in there too much, but another reason to sort of tidy them up, certainly the edges around them.
Yep.
You're supposed to clean up the garden at the end of the year?
You are. I'm sorry.
Oh, who knew? Let's go to Bess in Gilderland. Bess, you're on.
Yes, here I come. Here I come. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello.
Here you are.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, here I am.
Hi.
We're here.
Hello.
Hiya.
Yes. I had a beautiful lawn for a good
part of the lawn season. Then towards the middle of August, it started turning brown, so I watered it more, and now I found out that it was attacked by finch bugs.
Yeah.
It's totally wrecked. I'd like to know what I can do to bring it back, how intensive the rehab might be, and when is the timeline for doing it.
Finch bug is an odd bug. In an evolutionary sense, it's odd that an insect will kill that which it feeds on completely.
Yeah.
But chinch bug injects a toxin as it feeds, and that grass is dead. It's not coming back. You have to reseed it, which you could do now, or you could do in the spring. And if you treat it with one of these new endophytically enhanced grasses, I say new, it's been around for years, there are some grasses that are resistant to the chinch bug, and they don't eat it. So you'd want to get something that has insect-resistant grass in it, but either now or in the spring.
Mm-hmm. And are there product names for that kind of a grass seed?
Fescues, right?
Mostly. I think it's typically fescues,
some
but
perennial rye.
You know, you get a mix that will have some of it in there. If you're looking, if you ask if it's endophytically enhanced,
enhanced,
yeah, which is a fungus which enhances the. You know, that's a longer story.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
do I have to defatch or rake?
You're going to need to chew that turf up so the seed can come in contact with the soil.
Yeah.
And put down new soil over sand is probably. Well,
you don't have to do that.
Lost its lumps.
If your soil, you know, was doing a great job with the grass before, then your soil's probably good. Just roughing it up enough so that the new seed has a place to come in contact.
Yep.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, good. Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, Bess. We appreciate it. Thanks to Bess for calling, and let's go to Rima in Hinsdale.
If your soil, you know, was doing a great job with the grass.
Oh, hey. You got to turn the radio down there, okay? You're on.
That was me.
Yeah, boy, I'm sorry you waited all that time, and the radio was on, and I apologize. And Edith in the Berkshires. Edith.
Hi there.
Hello.
My radio isn't on.
Yay.
Okay.
I purchased many small shrubs in pots just a few weeks ago, and I'm not going to be able to get them into the ground, so I need to know how to keep them flourishing through the winter, and I need to know, should I cover the entire pot and plant with compost, or just the pot, and then what do I do?
Yeah, you could just literally plant those. I assume you're going to use them somewhere else in the spring, so you just want to kind of hold them through the winter. So the easiest way to do that, leave them in the containers, dig holes just as deep as the top of the container, and plant them pot and all. I would leave them up maybe an inch or so, just so you can get a hold of the container from the spring.
I'm not going to be able to plant them. That's the problem.
You can't heal them in.
Anywhere?
So, no. Okay, so then you've got to mulch them in. They can't come into your home. They won't make it through the winter. Actually, they need to go to sleep and stay sleeping. They need to be outdoors. So you do need to get mulch up to the top of those containers. Otherwise, the winter winds will end up probably.
I would be inclined not to lay them down and mulch the whole thing because
that creates
an environment for an animal to get in there and eat the top.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you know, in the in our business, we might have some plants left over at the end of the year, and though we have some different storage mechanisms, just pushing all those pots together, if you have 5 or 6 or 10 pots, making a little block. If you have a house or a garage that has a north side, has no sun whatsoever, you could make that little grouping on that side. That, believe it or not, that's the most protected side for the winter.
Hmm.
And then when it gets cold, Thanksgiving or thereabouts, as everyone's been saying, just push some mulch around the pots, and then you should be pretty well set.
You could also bring them into an unheated structure, a garage or a barn. I've done that many times, and just get them out of the wind and the weather.
And
the
that
sun.
Might be enough.
And that might be enough.
Depending on what plant it is and how bad the winter gets.
Right.
Anything around those roots, though, are going to help it.
It's a lot easier.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about watering?
You would water them in now and be done with it.
Yeah, that'd
just
be pretty good. If they're out of the sun and the wind.
Time.
Yep. Really? It won't dry out.
Yeah, I don't imagine you'd.
And I would say to postpone putting them inside that garage or outbuilding for as long as possible so that you don't have to worry about water. So they stay moist outside because it's raining regularly.
Really, till Thanksgiving at least,
yeah.
I would say.
Yep. Then at the last minute, maybe they're frozen a little bit to the ground. You sort of free them up and bring them all inside to the garage.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
Huh.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Edith.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Good luck.
Good day. Over to Nicole in Nassau. Nicole.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. I went to visit someone in Erie, Pennsylvania, and she had the most gorgeous gladiolas lining her front walk, and she did not take the bulbs out. Mm-hmm. Now, do I have any shot at leaving my glads in and getting them to bloom next year?
Probably not, because most, you know, our ground freezes up. But in, I'm thinking in terms of geography, Erie is right up
right
against
the lake,
right? She's literally within 5 miles of the lake.
Well, it can be colder than here, actually.
No, but her property is that close to that lake.
No, it's not.
It's also more consistent snow cover that would help.
So she either has a lot of snow cover, which insulates the ground, or she's so close that there's a little band there along those lakes that's really zone 7. It's like living on Nantucket.
Hmm. But you can't do it here.
No.
No, not going to work.
Absolutely no shot, huh?
You could
pile an exception, eight or 10 inches of something, mulch, material.
And we say this sometimes, that it's not going to work, and then we get a mild winter and we're all liars.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
So you don't know what the winter's going
to
be.
I'd love to see Nicole be proven right come springtime.
One of the reasons to pull up your gladiolus, though, is that you can really reduce the little mites that feed on the thrips that feed on the bulbs. So taking them up, washing them off, cleaning them, storing them does
good
them
good hygienic
in.
Yep. practice.
Yep. All right.
All right. Thanks for the bad news.
Thanks, Nicole.
We aim to please.
800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551, The Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves here to answer your questions. And Cindy in Voorheesville is next. Cindy.
Hi. Hydrangeas and rhododendrons. I'll get that out there because I will forget the names again. I have some rhododendrons in my front yard facing east. Last winter, the ends of the leaves, some of the leaves, I guess the more exposed ones, turned black and dried out crinkly.
Yep.
My brother told me to give them holly tone. I'm wondering when I should do that.
Well, the holly tone is actually not going to help the leaves. The holly tone might help the rhododendrons,
right,
depending on what the pH is.
Yeah, those are gone.
What's but holly tone? Yeah.
Holly tone is a type of fertilizer.
It's a fertilizer.
Okay.
Yep, and,
right.
and it is one that
I'm worried
Eric...
about this winter.
Worried about this winter.
What you want to do to minimize that problem is either wrap them in burlap or use an anti-transparent, one of the sprays that you put on the leaves that cuts down on moisture loss. That's a desiccation injury.
Yep.
The leaves are simply drying out. And,
yeah, they look frosted.
And it doesn't happen every year.
No,
it
does not.
You know, so some late cold winters that we have had the last couple of years have caused some damage. But it doesn't happen every year, so it's possible, that they'll come through just fine, especially if they're well established.
And we all think we had a lot of snow last winter, but if you keep track of it, there was a period of weeks, I think in February, where we didn't have any snow.
There was definitely
and
that.
Stuff burned because it dried out.
Yeah. So a little bit of burlap to shield the main prevalent wind in that area could make quite a bit of a difference. If it's really windy in there, wrapping around those plants with burlap would certainly solve that problem too.
Yeah, it's a sun and wind issue mostly.
Yeah. And that would only be burlap through the winter season, and then in the spring you take it off.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. George in East Hampton, Mass. George.
Hey there. Landscaper here in Western Mass, and I do a lot of work in Longmeadow. And I noticed this year we have a lot of big oak trees, and they're everywhere. And just a lack of acorns. Is it a sign of a mild winter, or is it cyclical?
It's cyclical on oak trees, for sure. They will produce bumper crops some years, and other and it's not every other year like some of the apples that we sort of have every other year. Oaks are more like a 5-year cycle.
There's some books that maintain that the oaks are somehow communicating with each other.
Really?
Yeah.
What do they say?
whether or not to produce acorns.
Yes, whether or not they have. And so 2 years ago.
I remember that it was about 4 years ago that it was just a huge, huge crop.
Yeah, incredible bump.
A huge crop.
Incredible.
4 years ago it wasn't.
And then 2 years it happened again. We had like a mini
version of that.
And now it's been fairly.
And that's, yep.
So probably that's, a big crop coming soon.
That cycle has a big
it's
thing.
It's been
to,
wonderful as far as cleanup, though.
It has a lot to do with,
not complaining.
With the tick population, because when there's a lot of mice, when there are a lot of acorns, there's a lot of mice, and then there's more ticks.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
You know, this
takes
is,
a year.
Takes a year. It's a cycle.
Right. This show, I learned so many things in this show. It's Tim's turn. Tim in Steventown. Hello, Tim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I have a grow horseradish every year, and I usually harvest it in right around Veterans Day in November, but it doesn't stay tangy for very long. Is there? Am I harvesting it at a wrong time, or should I do it sooner or later, or is it something I'm doing with the horseradish?
We had this question before, and I looked it up. I believe fall is the right time. I don't know how to affect the tang.
Does it have anything to do with the storage technique of that?
Well, I mean, you just put, you know, you put vinegar with it and refrigerate it.
And it tastes great when you start,
yeah.
And then it
fades?
Oh,
yeah, it's torturous when you're first doing it and grinding it, and it's, you know, good for a few days, and then
it just
loses its taste.
It loses its bite.
Well, it's a recipe question.
Now it's a Food Friday all of a sudden.
Yeah. Now it's turned it right around.
I'm sorry, Tim. We couldn't help you there, buddy. Appreciate the call. Let's see. It's time now for Anthony. Anthony in Kingston, you're on.
Hi. So we're trying to identify this tree. We were at a wedding about a month ago in Beacon, New York, and there was this beautiful, tall tree with, like, these long, windy, vine-like branches that reached out maybe 30-odd feet, and it dropped these big, green, bumpy fruits or something about the size of a small coconut, and one fell right on us while we were sitting in at the wedding, and we're trying to find out what this tree is.
Osage orange? Is it?
That was my first guess.
Not a good tree.
And I don't know as if you would have it the size of a coconut, not quite.
They're big.
They're big, though. They do get big. Is there thorns on the tree?
Maybe a large grapefruit size.
Yeah, that sounds like an Osage orange.
Your whole hand.
That definitely sounds like that's the only tree I think that we're coming up with here. Did it have thorns anywhere up in that tree?
Not that I recall.
Okay, if it did, it might be up high.
Like a very, very sappy. Like what? There was like, it was like juicy, the things that dropped.
And that you, when you handled the fruit, was it fragrant? Like,
was it fragrant?
Yeah.
I don't really recall, but it was very sticky.
Huh.
Yeah, my gut feeling would be Osage orange. They also call it hedge apple sometimes.
Rick Orlando mentions some fruit that is grown down there, and I can't remember the name of it.
Bumpy like that with that size, I can't think of anything else that would do it. So I got to think that is probably it. But if you do have if you have any photos of that tree, you can certainly send it to my email.
And Anthony, did this hit you in the head when it fell?
It landed directly next to my wife and daughter and I.
Oh, so you were safe. Yeah. Oh, good.
It was like the tree was giving an offering at the wedding. Oh, it was like a big thunderous event.
Wow.
that's nice.
If you wanted to send a photo, fred@landisarboretum.org, I could, you know, take a look at it again. But I think we're concluding that it's most likely an Osage orange.
Okay, Anthony, and good luck, and congratulations on no concussion. We really appreciate the fact that the tree did not drop it on your head. I tell you what, we only have a minute here before the break. Rather than get into a call, Zach the engineer, let's take our break a little early, and then we'll come back. It's The Gardening Show. Fred, Greg, Bob are here to answer your questions for the final time in 2018. Hang in. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. We have Bob Ward here. No, we don't. Bob Ward is an old commentator. No, we have Bob Graves here and Fred Breglia and Greg Ward. Yeah, Bob Ward hasn't been on Midday Magazine in quite some time. All right.
Okay.
This one came in via email from Christine, who writes, I have a small flower garden. Wondering how far down to trim the plants before the snow flies, maybe this weekend. First of all, Christine, don't think that. I hope that doesn't happen. But what do you guys think?
You know, well, I like to cut back perennials. I usually do it, I don't know, six inches to the ground or something like that.
Yeah.
Not 6 inches. You don't want to go right to the ground with them.
You know, most of them are those stems are dead. So you take them pretty close, you know, whatever is convenient.
4 or 6 inches.
And I want to just say this weekend is, even if it is a little good flurrying, it's going to be a great time to do the garden.
A little flurrying. I mean, depending on where you are, you may see some snow this weekend.
I've heard elevations potential. Sure.
Yeah. But that's not unusual.
Not as bad as originally what I had heard, which sounded like it was more widespread with temperatures, but it didn't go that way.
Okay. So. This one's from Carolyn. What do you recommend we do with the old soil when we replace it? Seems wrong to toss it in the trash to sit in a landfill. Can we compost or should we put it in leaf bags?
I compost.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, even if it has a little perlite in there, you notice that later on. Eventually, it all dissipates.
What's perlite?
Perlite is a it's an exploded rock. It's actually like a volcanic rock that they heat and explode.
Oh,
and it
yeah?
turns into like, looks like styrofoam. You might have seen it in potting mixes or potting soil. It's like styrofoamy.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Dino and Colony.
Speaking. How are you guys?
Hello.
Hello.
Hey. So, nobody mentioned any Caddyshack references with the chinch bugs?
No. Spalding? No,
not
we
yet.
Didn't. Okay.
Yeah, thanks. So, moving on. I've got a bank of hydrangea in my backyard, and this winter I took out three really big pine trees that kind of kept the whole backyard in some pretty deep shade all day long. And this year, the hydrangea, which have been very healthy, and the whole bank would turn white. I hardly had any blooms at all, and it started to look really unhealthy towards the end of the year. What's going on?
If they're a shade-loving hydrangea, they're not happy.
So if they're white and they're like they're rounded, kind of snowball-like flowers.
Yeah, exactly. The big snowball ones.
So that's probably that.
The shade is a lot less deep. They weren't in much sun, but
so that Annabelle hydrangea. Yeah. Is probably the one, or Annabelle's the selection we refer to most of the time, arborescence hydrangea. And when you, so they can grow in full sun. We have them in full sun. They do great things. Yes, the leaves got a little tired by late August or late July, August, and their prime time is late June to late July. And so they didn't do a good job even then?
No. And, usually I've got a whole bank of white. And I probably had half a dozen blooms out of a bank that's probably 3 feet by 14 feet.
Did the plants look good all around though? Healthy wise?
No, they looked kind of off, right? Sparse.
Yeah. When were the trees taken down?
Yeah.
What'd you say, Bob?
When were the trees taken down?
January.
Yeah. Okay. You know, it's very possible that change, sometimes that first year when you, even though the plant will thrive there and do good there, that transition, if it's used to shade, I mean, even something that loves sun, if you prune trees on a sunny side and you take away a lot of that growth and it now exposes a new part of that plant to sun, you can get some issues that occur.
I think my inclination would be given another season.
That's what I'm going to say.
Worried.
I think one more year, and I bet this will probably look a lot better this coming year.
If you can confirm that there are, you know, hydrangea arborescens, those guys can be pruned right to the ground. You don't have to leave any stems. So cleaning them up, you know, maybe adding a little compost around them, just kind of reinvigorating the soil, a little fertilizer, a little mulch. And some of that you can do now, some of that you can do in the spring. It could all happen in the spring if you really wanted to.
Okay.
They're
pretty old. The house is 1952, and I bought it from the estate of the first owner. So, these are probably, 60-year-old plants. Okay. I don't know how long they've been there. But
We went into just really thinking again, we went into a really dry period while they were going into their peak bloom time. So June was really dry. Even July was really dry. And by the time they were finished with their peak, it started raining a lot, which kind of beat up the foliage and made a lot of foliage look bad.
You know, if they're in the shade, they may not have got as extensive a root system as they may have developed more roots this year because they had to where they didn't have to before.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Now we go over to Gene in Albany. Hello, Gene.
Hello. I was wondering about, I've heard you speak before about the crab apples losing their leaves early. Well, this last year that happened, and this year it happened again, but in the middle of September, I got not a lot of leaves, but quite a few leaves and blossoms.
Huh.
And yeah. Then will this affect how the tree survives?
No.
Not likely. I'm sure, you know, crab apples are, all apples are very hardy, very tough. What we have been noticing a lot of late summer this year, repeat bloom on rhododendron, a little magnolia, some crab apples, some cherries. Just the weather, the way in which the weather happened, the amount of rain possibly.
Yeah, when you have a dry period and then it gets wet again, the tree sort of says, oh, okay, it's not so bad as I thought.
No, it's been a weird year across the board, really, in a lot of ways. It affected all the foliage that we had as well. The foliage has been affected quite dramatically this year.
No worries.
I think you're good, too.
All right, thanks. Over to Jerry. Jerry in Chatham, you're on.
Okay, thanks. So I've had these raised beds. They're big, 16 inches tall, 30 inches wide, 24 feet long. I have three of them now for many, many years, over 20 years. You know, from year to year, I put some new dirt in, I fertilize the plants. Lately, I've been getting a lot of mulch, using that, turning it over, thinking it becomes compost for the next year. But I'm just wondering, is this stuff just wearing out? Is the compost mulch thing good enough, or do I need to do something else to keep it fertile?
Are your crops declining? Is that your worry?
Yeah.
Boy, the first thing I'm going to do is check the pH.
Yep.
When you start adding materials like that, particularly composts, particularly if it's municipal compost, the pH on it's way high. And
I'm an organic guy. I mean, is that?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I mean, it might be good. It might be good too. But as a point of reference, Bob brings up a really good point, and especially with a raised bed, it's going to be even more of a factor because the pH is going to be even easier to adjust. You don't have the buffering capacities of the soil.
Yeah.
So just checking that pH, take it to your local cooperative extension, take a random sample.
More than pH, they'll do a complete nutrient study as well.
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet you're too alkaline. You're going to need to add some sulfur. That would be my guess.
Jerry, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop, and it's the last gardening show for 2018. Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward are here. The lines are loaded. I swear we could do this every month.
I think
without
a
problem. You could do it all day.
There's
right?
No off season.
You want to make the whole format gardening? Hey, you might be onto something there. All right, over to James in Hudson. James, you're on.
Hi. Yes. Hold on. Taking off speaker.
Oh, splendid.
I have a friend, my best friend, she has this really gorgeous, probably 100-year-old maple tree in her backyard. And it's really healthy, but the problem is that for about a 10-foot diameter around it, and then in some places even more, it's like everything is bare because it has a really aggressive root system. And I was wondering if there's anything she could do now or in the spring to like get something to grow there.
You're saying the lower part of the tree doesn't have any foliage, or nothing grows underneath her tree?
No, nothing grows on the ground.
On the ground under her tree. Okay, so my gut feeling would be that it's probably and potentially a Norway maple. It certainly could be Acer platanoides. And if that is the case, those trees will produce enough dense shade that it's really hard to get too much established under them without doing a little bit of crown raising. And when I say crown raising, we're talking about, and I don't know if this is even an option, but if it is, you could possibly doing it the correct way, taking off some of those lower branches, and it's going to let a lot more light under that tree. In which case, then you'd be able to maybe get something that would work.
Yeah, we love the shade in the summer, though, because it's so nice in the summer.
You're probably not going to grow grass under it.
You're not going to get grass.
Yeah. Well, no grass, but like when I go walk, I walk some dogs in the woods and stuff. So what I see is like things that like clover and like moss seem to do. Like,
mosses, ferns, hostas, pachysandra. There's some things that'll grow in that. But
a juga, you might get a juga in there.
The other problem is that ground is so full of roots and so compacted, it's going to be you're going to be chiseling out a hole.
It's a very clay soil in Hudson.
It's going to be hard.
Yep. Another option would be to just create a make it by design so it looks purposefully done. You now create a large mulch ring under that, and that could look attractive. And around the edges of that mulch ring, most likely there'd be enough light in there to be able to put some ornamental flowers around the outside, and there'd be a lot less coarse roots in there to have to, you know, sort of try to chop through, which is never a good thing to do anyways. So I think that, you know, certainly would solve the problem.
And I've seen a little, it's not always easy, but, and you wouldn't be doing this too close to the tree, but finding a few pockets where there aren't too many large roots, gently excavating out that soil and creating these little islands where a hardy perennial that we mentioned, like a fern or a hosta, could actually survive in there on its own. So you could sort of strategically plant some perennials under there in that mulched area.
Let's go to Suzanne in Mount Tremper. Suzanne.
Oh, hey. Hi there. Great. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. Great.
Actually, I'm going to – okay, I took you off a speaker.
I love it. Thank you.
Sure. So – we have a new septic field that was put in.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And they had to take down a lot of trees and stuff. So they built it up from the ground. It's got like, it's like 4 feet high in terms of, you know, like all the different things that they put in. So what we found, though, is that the grass didn't grow very well. And I'm hoping it's really just because they really didn't put enough grass seed down. But what we're finding that's sort of hard right now is that we've got all of these small stones all over our yard, where, because they had to actually like sort of create a little bit of a road to where the septic field was put in.
Yeah.
So we've just got all these stones, and they're like big gravel, you know. And what I'm trying to figure out is, how do I deal with this next year when I try to put more grass down? I won't be able to really walk on this barefoot, for example, because of all these stones. Do you have any suggestions for
away from the septic field, the raised area? You're talking about an area that accesses your septic field, not the actual septic field?
No, actually both. I mean, because the septic field itself, where they put...
You want to be able to walk on that as well.
Yeah, and they told us that there's no reason why we can't walk on it. I mean, that would be
fine. Oh, that's perfectly fine, yeah.
You know, you're going to rake out the stones, or get somebody with a York rake, clean that up a little bit.
A York rake?
Yeah, it's a tool that goes behind a tractor or machine.
Although you do want to watch that tractor around that drain
field,
system.
Yeah,
you
don't, nothing too heavy.
Nothing too heavy on that part
and,
of it.
And bringing in a little bit of topsoil.
You're going to need a little topsoil. Yep.
You know, we're going to have to put more down probably.
Grass is the easiest thing in the world to grow in full sun. If you're not growing grass, it's probably that soil is just not very nice stuff.
No, it's probably hard stuff. So, but if you do, you know, the good news is top dressing with soil over the top, it's going to improve down below as well, and it's not going to hurt anything, and it's easy enough to, you know, certainly start putting some grass. I think it'll start to work. You probably need to add a little soil, maybe a little bit of raking first to just get some of those rocks out.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Should work out pretty well for her, though.
Ken in Rosendale. Ken, you're up.
Yes, I think you could give me good advice for my wife's National Italian Heritage Identification Plant, the fig tree.
The fig tree.
Because if I let it die, there's word on the street that they come change her son's name from Dominic and Salvatore to Marcus.
And you don't want to get involved with that.
Okay.
No, so you want to keep this fig tree alive and doing well.
Right.
Understood.
Yes.
You're going to want to bring that. You're going to want to bring that guy in.
Is it in the ground or in a pot?
It's in the ground, and somebody told me that they actually bury the they make a trench and they bury the fig tree, and other people just say burlap.
Yeah, burlap's not going to do it.
I don't think burlap's going to
do it. The other alternative I've heard is you build a box.
A fig tree box.
I've heard that too.
Plywood box that you built.
You
then
can't bring it
set
in.
Up around it.
Right. And that protects it from the wind and whatnot?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, because it can handle cold temperature.
Some of the old guys I know used to dig up bury it like a grave.
Really?
And it works, but it's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, you trench the area. I'm not still sure how, you know, it means you have to sort of loosen
it up, bend it over. It's
a lot of work.
Side. It's
kind
of iffy.
Are you pretty fond of your wife then?
Oh, gentlemen, I love her.
Okay.
So how long has it been in the ground? Because we might want to talk you into digging it up and putting it in a pot.
I was going to ask him that one. Yep.
I think 2 years. I would build a box for her, no problem at all.
Okay.
Just a box will do. Does it have to be insulated, air, you know,
I'd insulate it.
Yeah. Yeah, some of that panel, like that foam panel insulation, you can kind of put it right to the, you know, if you're using plywood or whatever to frame it in, kind of stick it right to those panels.
Yeah, whatever you can do to
whatever, liquid nails kind better. Of thing.
It's a lot of work. Just buy another tree next year, right?
Yeah, yeah, some people ask.
It's a pretty big tree. You get a lot of figs off a big one.
Okay, man. I don't want any. I don't want any domestic strife.
The inside.
She's worth the work.
Okay, buddy. All right, that sounds good. Yeah,
otherwise, if you could get it into a container, though, every fall, and that's where Greg was going with this. If you could, you get it into a container every fall. You kind of bring it in. Every spring, you put it back out.
They got so big, I couldn't put them in the garage anymore.
All right.
But then I put them in a barn one winter, and it was colder, and I lost them.
All right, this is the last call for 2018. Wow. We have 1 minute. Hugh and Kinderhook, you're the last one for the year.
Good show, as always. One idea tree in Williamsburg, Virginia. We saw a tree that had some cones. It had shiny leaves like rhododendron, and the cone then had red seeds that pop out of it.
The magnolia.
You know what That's it could what be?
Magnolia?
Evergreen magnolia.
Yeah,
I
where did you see it?
Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. Okay, yeah, that would work.
Grandiflora type of magnolia.
Yep. All right, well, a satisfied customer here to end the year. All right, now, Fred Breglia, how do people find out about Landis?
It's landisarboretum.org, and also our Facebook page as well. It's /Landis Arb.
All right, now, Greg, not Bob, but Greg Ward, how do we find out about Ward's Nursery?
Well, if you could just go to Great Barrington, 600 South Main Street, and pull in anytime, or you could go to wardsnursery.com.
That's the one. Okay. And how about you, Bob Graves?
Well, we're right by the Albany Airport if we're given directions.
Well, I saw it. I drove by.
Can't miss them.
It's Fattigans.com.
You ever get a B-17 landing in the...
Boy, they go pretty low sometimes.
Sure. Oh, hey, guys, we'll see you. We'll do a midwinter edition early in 2019.
Sounds
Thank
good.
Thank you for a great year. Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated for over 50 years with indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, bird feeders on seeds, organic fertilizer and advice, HadleyGardenCenter.com. HMT at the Spa Little Theater kicks off their 34th season with the musical Young Frankenstein, based on the Mel Brooks film. Weekends through October 28th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses, eye exams by appointment, EyeDentity, eyewearalbany.com. Thanks again to Bob, Fred, and Greg for being here today. Thank you for listening to the gardening program. We'll do it again soon. Trust me. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Jesse King. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we'll unmask the secrets behind Halloween candy. Stand by for news.